So I'm going to explain selection bias, interpretation bias, and how knowledge is produced in history, and also some different views or approaches to history. But this last part can be actually best read in the link that I'm providing. So first of all, how is knowledge produced in history? History is not only about uncovering the facts of the past. Basically, it's not only about what happened in the past, but also why did certain things happen the way they happened. So it is a what and a why. So it is basically the facts and their interpretation. And it is like this, that historians, they try to create in many cases a so-called a narrative. A narrative is a story of what happened. And in many cases, we do not actually know what happened and why things happened, because we only have an incomplete picture of what happened. Like basically we have only certain documents in the past which might be incomplete, or we might dig out certain artifacts from the ground about the past, but this does not really tell you a lot of why certain things happened the way they did happen. So this means that the historians have to use now their brains, so to say, to interpret these facts and to determine or to come up with a possible cause and effect relationship, why certain things happened the way they did. And selection bias is now the following. When a historian has certain facts available, for example, even eyewitness accounts or documents, written documents, or certain maybe drawings or paintings, or maybe old things that were found in the grave, maybe, then a historian has to actually make a choice which one of these facts are now more important than others. So they have to do some kind of a ranking, because in maybe it could be that sometimes maybe there's contradictory facts, and the historian therefore has to select those facts that he or she considers to be important. And this selection process, during the selection process, the historian might introduce bias. And, this basically means that the historian might not be entirely objective. Okay, so selection bias is a certain lack of objectivity when certain facts are selected for further for the use to do history. And interpretation bias is something similar. When a historian tries to interpret now why certain things happened in the past the way they happened, then the historian might also not be entirely objective, and different historians might interpret the facts differently from each other. But basically, both of these are kind of problems of knowledge in history, and the question is if history can ever be therefore entirely objective. Because history in that sense always depends to a certain extent on the historian. But that is only one view of what history could be, because there are other approaches that actually have a different view of this. Okay, so this covers the first three questions here. And now, what are some different views or approaches to history? And here I would like to refer you to the link which lists some of these views or approaches, and you can talk about some of them. So I'd like to move on now to the area of knowledge math. And here I'd like to talk about the formal system, and specifically axioms, rules of inference, and a theorem. And a formal system contains all three of them: axioms, rules, and theorems. The question is now what are they? I will give you an analogy here to explain this, and I'm going to use the analogy of chess, the game chess. Okay, the game chess can be seen as a formal system, and in that sense it's quite similar to math, because math is also a formal system, of course. So what is this? Well, axioms are basic assumptions that you have to make. So for example, in chess, these could be the starting positions of the different figures. Okay, axioms are neither right nor wrong, they're just basic assumptions that you want to build your system on. And in the case of chess, these could be the starting position of the black and the white figures. Okay, so in math you also have certain basic assumptions that all other math is built on. And if you basically were here when we did the so-called MIU puzzle, then it was like this, that these letters, the starting letters MI, these were our basic assumptions, we basically tried to get from the MI to the MU by using the so-called certain rules of inference. And so there are certain mathematical rules that you can apply, and you have to apply them correctly. And in chess, there are also certain rules in chess that you have to apply in order for the game to be a valid game. And if you do not apply them correctly, well, then you are basically playing a different game. It's a little bit like, or if you like the comparison with soccer, I mean, soccer also has certain rules, and there are certain places where a ball, for example, is not allowed to be, okay? So that means within the rules of the game of soccer, the ball can move around, of course, in the soccer field. But, I mean, there are certain positions that are not possible with if you basically, stick to the rules, okay? And so that means basically in math, you also apply the certain rules, for example, the rules of algebra. And if you apply them correctly, then you can solve mathematical equations, of course. And a mathematical theorem, that is a mathematical statement which was proven to be correct. Okay. So in math, we do not have theories like in the natural sciences where we can test the theories with an experiment. But rather, it is like this, that in math, we have those mathematical statements, the theorems, for example, when you solve an equations for x, maybe in algebra, then there are certain equations that you can, by applying the rules, you get certain equations as a result, and those equations, if you have applied the rules correctly, are basically correct, okay? This is also, now the question is, how can you produce knowledge in math? Well, knowledge in math is produced by so-called mathematical proofs. And I just want to explain this as well. For example, you know, to give you a very simple example, you know that x plus 1 is bigger than x, obviously, okay? And what you can do is you can now try to take any x that you can think of, and you can now check. I don't know, if you say x is 5, then 5 plus 1 is 6, which is bigger than x, which is 5. 6 is bigger than 5, so you're going to say it's fine, it's correct. But the thing is now the following. The question is this correct with all numbers? And there are infinitely many numbers, okay? For you, in order to figure this out, you have two possibilities. You could either try an infinitely many numbers and try to insert them and see if x plus 1 is bigger than x. And of course, that's not practical. Or you can try to come up with a mathematical proof that actually proves that. And once you this has been proven, then you know that it must be possible for all numbers. So, and this is basically how we create knowledge in math, is by mathematical proofs and certain mathematical statements, the theorems, they can be... people can try to prove them, okay? And once they have been proven, then you know that they are correct for all numbers, okay? So this is basically talks about math, okay? So I talked about formal systems. Formal system is basically a system. This is kind of maybe say a game, comparable to a game, which basically has basic certain assumptions, axioms, it has rules, and there are also certain mathematical statements, the theorems, okay? So what I wanted to do next is I want to move on to the area of knowledge arts. And what is art according to Leo Tolstoy? I've given you a link here as well. Leo Tolstoy basically said that art has nothing to do with beauty at all. Art has to do something with the communication of emotions, okay? So an artist basically has to, creates a painting or a music piece or an artwork to communicate his or her feelings to the audience, okay? And in this reading it says quite clearly that Tolstoy did not believe that this has to do anything with beauty. Okay, and in the Wikipedia article that I provided, it also talks about the aesthetic, the formal and the institutional theory of art. And I would like to ask you please to quickly summarize them. The reason why I would like to ask you to summarize all of those things, by the way, is so that you have a little bit of theory in your nice little notebook, so that you can use some examples for the essay, for the TOK essay. And then I want to jump over to the way of knowing language. I talked about this in classroom, the differences between connotation and denotation. Maybe you can give an example of this. The denotation of a word is its dictionary definition. The connotation of a word is its emotional association. I want to give you an example. Denotation of murder, for example, would be the killing of a person, right? But the connotation of this word is negative. okay? Because it has negative associations. Or to give you another one, an example that I've given is this, also in the reading about euphemisms, is this, what about a person has passed away? Okay, it basically means the person has died, but the connotation is more positive. Okay, so it's a more positive or a more neutral emotional association here. Okay, euphemisms are different of basically of ways of saying something ugly in a nice way or in a nicer way. So in other words, you're trying to give something a more positive connotation this way. It can be seen in a positive way in the sense that you try to not hurt somebody else's feelings this way, or it could be also done negatively by essentially trying to, sell a person something negative in such a way that the person agrees to it. You say, yeah, we're on a peace mission, then you know very well that they're not on a peace mission, but that they're going to war. But that's a euphemism for going to war. Okay? So what are some knowledge issues with languages? There is in the handout that I have given you to you, there are a whole list of knowledge issues. What you can do now is you can try to pick one of them and briefly explain them what some knowledge issues are. One possibility of a knowledge issue could be is the so-called the linguistic relativity, and essentially it's the question, does the language that you speak, does this actually can this actually also influence the things that you can know? The so-called the Saffir-Wurff hypothesis as well. That is also one of those language issues that is commonly appears. So okay, so I wish you all the best, and please try to quickly summarize and quickly try to answer these questions. Okay, bye-bye.